screen count.
Okay.
Are you comfortable with that?
Yeah, of course. Let me
Oh,
just
great.
pull out the
Okay.
meeting. All right. So I think we'll first start with introductions and welcome. So I'll just call people as I see them on the screen. So starting with Kat.
Cat touch care, Council Staff.
And then I see me, Franco. TJ, you're
Hi,
next.
TJ Lee Miyake, he, him, council member.
All right, Kira, you're next.
Kira, Council Staff.
And then Laura, or Laura, sorry.
I answered it either. It's fine. Laura, she, her, council member.
Steven, you're next on my screen.
Good afternoon, Stephen Spano, the AIDS Legal Referral Panel.
Then Lee.
Hi, Lee Jewell, council member.
And then I see Natalie.
Hi, mentally health analyst. It's my first week, so I've just been dropping into meetings to see what's going on.
Awesome,
Welcome.
welcome. All right. So I think after that, just if we can quickly then review and approve the October 1st agenda. We have to vote for this for approval, right?
So we have a pretty straightforward agenda today. Reviewing and approving the agenda, last month's minutes, going over the HCAP report from Stephen, and then talking about any updates for an assessment slash COLA. This can be a consensus vote. It doesn't have to be
Awesome.
moved
Perfect.
to anything.
Awesome. Anyone not comfortable with the
You can just say if there's no objections, it's approved by consensus.
Beautiful, then. Approved by consensus if no objections. Thanks, Lee. Then the next one will be to review and approve the September 3rd minutes. Okay. Thank you, Kira, for showing. Are there any objections for approval of this agenda from last month? And we'll wait for the fourth page before we call it. All right, seeing that there's no objections, it is approved. And next will be announcements. Do we have any announcements? All right, quick and easy. any public comment? Sounds like none either. So HCAP report, Stephen, take it away.
Hey folks, thank you. I won't start with too much time today. I will, as per usual, just share a couple of cases and then make myself available to answer any questions or dive deeper in if necessary or desired. The first I wanted to share, because this was actually news to me, I didn't realize, in the very first item, which is 2025-69. This is an instance where I referred a client. Basically, the client said that they were having trouble with mobility, that was had been an ongoing issue, and that they've spoken with their medical case manager to get support for linking to paratransit and also IHSS support in home. And when I contacted their medical case manager, they said, "Oh yeah, we referred them." And I said, "Well, the client might need some assistance in like connecting to them because they're having some challenges in doing that." And they said, "Well, that's not really what we do." And I said, "Well, what just send me the links to these organizations so I can see, because it's not what I do either, but I was under the impression this was a medical case management issue." And it just seems like there's kind of an overwhelm in the system of care at that level. And so I think what wound up happening was a referral to an additional case management services from another HIV provider, and I'm informed that that service provider has reached out and they're working toward connecting. And then I requested an additional referral to ICM support through another provider, and I think they're effectuating that. But I just wanted to note this because it does seem like case management is at all time capacity level. I've noticed that in response times to not only my support, but also for, what clients are sharing. And so I just wanted to make sure that the community was aware of that. I also wanted to share, this is part and parcel there. You would see this if you were to look through. There was an issue, there was an instance where I supported a client through a possible discharge from a skilled nursing facility, but this is kind of time and time coming again on the same page down at 2025-17. It's the last one on the page. So this is an instance where a client was reporting, cognitive issues. They said that they're super, tired. They've been forgetting their medication some days, or forgetting whether they took it or not, and not sure whether they should take it again. These are all things that to me, suggest this person needs a little bit more care and perhaps something medically supportive like an RCFCI. But the challenge with an RCFCI level of care is it is also quite restrictive. You can't be gone for any length of time really without reporting to the CNAs there. And oftentimes the facilities are not on lockdown, but they're closed facilities. It's not, you can't really have visitors and stuff coming in and out the way you would, a private residence, or even in some instances like a long-term care facility. But this is kind of like between the skilled nursing facility in this case and others that I've kind of been encountering, I'm seeing, and this is again kind of held over from my last year's efforts and the years before, where I'm talking about, the upcoming need for additional in-home support for folks who are capable of independent living with just a little bit more help. And doing, medication adherence, things like that's not going to be something you get from an IHSS worker, right? The IHSS worker can help you live independently, but they're not going to support on any kind of like medical level. And so, I'm not sure what exists, in that world. We've tried to, try to support, but like one of the, concerns of leaving like something like a skilled nursing facility, even for somebody who is like able to take their medication and they can do all of those things, but let's say has mobility issues, that is a whole separate thing, right? In the instance with the skilled nursing facility, which I think is also on here, I'm still working with that client. This is a client who has one working limb. They can't pick themselves up, and they're not going to be able to use a walker because they only have one arm. Discharging them from a skilled nursing facility to independent living could be really dangerous. Like, they can't use the restroom, they can't dress themselves. But that's also not something that IHSS is going to be able to support on. This is somebody who needs in-home nursing care to kind of, keep them eligible, but they're not, or to, sorry, to keep them living independently. But they may not necessarily be eligible for, especially with the changing rules around Medi-Cal, they may not be eligible for a skilled nursing level of care because otherwise they have good health, right? They can take their medication. They don't have cognitive decline at this point, So I'm just seeing these gaps, and it's not necessarily a cohesive story, but it is one worth talking about, even in the kind of abstract, is, trying to, if we're trying to meet folks where they are, there are most certainly some gaps in the tiered levels of care that exist, especially those that are paid for by Medi-Cal. So with that, I will make myself available for questions. If there's anything else on the report that you guys wanted to talk about, I'm here.
Thank you, Stephen. Any questions from anyone on the call today for Stephen?
Steven, is there any way to like reach out to DOS and see what they can do?
Well,
I mean, sorry.
yeah. I mean, for better or for worse, I'm finding that the system of care for HIV is see appears to be more robust in a lot of ways than it is for folks with other disabilities. DOS can support with some, to some extent, but they don't have. Most of the time, they're referring, that's HSA. What they're going to do is refer to IHSS. And unless the client is eligible in some way for, in-home care, they're not going to support. But we do have the, now it's not known as the AIDS waiver program, but there are programs that are available for folks living with HIV that are not available, for other folks who are seniors. But to answer your question, we are working to partner more with DOS. I think you've seen the kind of outreach from the AIDS Foundation. I think there's going to be a press release going out pretty soon, if it hasn't already, as far as a proposal that we put in to try and get additional funding. I've been included in that, and I've been a proponent for it. I've appeared in public comment. That's something that we can all do. I think the comment period for this upcoming budget, it might be over, but we've been involved in needs assessments. So the answer is yes, but it's all going to depend on funding, TJ, and we know where that's at. So does that answer your question?
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Steven? All right, seeing like there's none, we can thank you, Steven, again for the update. We can now move on to the next part of the agenda, which is the needs assessment and COLA update.
Yeah, and I can take that. So, as folks may remember, last month we voted on a COLA target, and that was people living with HIV who have immigrant experience. And actually, after talking more about this with our team, there was a lot of interest in maybe expanding this COLA target. And so we thought maybe folks would like to vote it to be a needs assessment target instead. COLA targets are typically on a smaller scale. So we typically get anywhere from 10 to 12 participants for a COLA versus a needs assessment. As you probably know, this last time we got over 50 participants. That's not saying that we should expect that, but I know there was a lot of interest about kind of expanding this target. So how do folks feel about that?
I think it's an awesome idea.
This would also mean that, because I think some, I'm not sure who mentioned it, but somebody mentioned conducting one-on-one interviews versus a focus group and then also offering them online or via the phone. So we would be able to do that if we converted it to a needs assessment target.
And just as a refresher, Kira, can you remind us all, especially for me too, being newer, like the difference between like the COLA and the needs assessment? I know that obviously the size is one of the things, but also just in terms of like what you can do or like what the difference in terms of like what it will tell you based on which route you go, basically.
So typically, our needs assessment targets are both of them are voted here. And then the needs assessment, that target is typically a lot more, it can be specific. And so the COLA tends to be a lot more general because we are expecting a smaller number. And we typically focus that one, since it is a smaller number, we try to work with an established support group already. To kind of ensure that we are meeting that target. And then for the needs assessment, it's a lot longer of an outreach period, time period if we're looking at that. And we're also able to conduct individual interviews. Both of them are they're pretty similar in terms of participants getting incentives. The needs assessment is HRSA mandated, and then the COLA target is something that the staff just takes on. It's like an additional metric that we add.
And is the COLA done as a group or as individual interviews too?
It would be no, the call is typically done as a group.
Okay.
So, go ahead and explain a little bit more what happens in a COLA and who's present.
Yeah, of course. So during a COLA, since we typically work with someone for an established support group, it's typically Kat and I that will be present. And then it's anywhere from, I think before we've had as little as 5 participants to as many as 12. And typically I mean, it depends on what target population we're working with, but we'll typically also have the facilitator of that support group kind of helping us with that group.
Does Steven still accompany you?
No, Stephen actually only accompanied us for the people who have experienced eviction,
Okay.
COLA.
Thank you.
All right. So, what do folks think about turning that COLA target into a needs assessment target? Is that something folks would want?
Sorry, say that again. That COLA target into a needs assessment target?
Yes.
And
Oh, I think
which.
you missed it, Thomas, when you walked in. I think that the last time we were discussing people experiencing or people that have some sort of immigration or experience. And so I
Yes.
think that initially that was going to be done as in the form of a COLA, but because it was such interest, I think Kira is proposing that perhaps we could reconsider and perhaps vote for it to be part of a needs assessment and then doing something else for a COLA, essentially.
I like it. So.
All right. So any opposed? No. All right. Perfect. Well, then we have our needs assessment COLA for next year. So that's very exciting. But that now does mean we should think about a COLA target. So we're back to square one in a sort of way.
Sorry, I know last time and I saw a couple hands, so I want to. We defined it specifically. What was the language we landed on with regards to immigrant? Like, I
It's
can't
people
remember.
living with HIV who have immigrant experience.
Got it. Thank you.
Ahead, Stephen.
Thank you for fielding the question. I know it's out of the ordinary. So just to make sure, the needs assessment is the one that's required by HRSA, right?
Yes.
For that, is there because well, we have an immigration department here that's in a big upsurge of cases. Can I ask what information is required of participants? Is there personally identifying information for the needs assessment?
No. So for both the COLA and the needs assessment, we keep it anonymous and completely confidential. So what we'll typically ask is just for folks to participate, especially for doing a focus group, is just a first name.
Oh, thank you.
I was gonna mention in terms of like particular groups of interest for a COLA that might be worth pursuing or like a proposal. It's that just based on like the new HIV infection reports, it seems like there was like an uptick at least on what we saw, and specifically like cis women, for instance. And I was wondering, I don't know, like if there is this particular group or something about that sort of either targets or addresses like the needs of like cis women living with HIV or specific populations, because I know the Black African American population and Latin and the Latinx population were disproportionately affected in terms of the number of infections. Like I think it nearly doubled or something like that. And so just curious to see like if that would be something of interest, just because I saw that was kind of striking to me in the information that was presented.
Go ahead, Thomas.
I think TJ beat me to it.
Thanks, Thomas. Yeah, I was just curious, are there any, because occasionally we do needs assessments or COLAs that we want to follow back up on a few years later, 3 or 4 years later, or is there anything in the pipeline that we might want to look at and consider?
I believe the last, let me pull up their website really quick. The last thing that I was looking at was transgender community. So let me make sure that that's something we haven't done.
I think we did
So
it.
we actually did that, just kidding, in
Yeah, when was it?
2022.
2022. Okay, yeah. That
Okay.
list is so important because I often lose track.
We did have a mental health challenges one from 2016.
Name off some of the other ones we've done recently so we're not duplicating ourselves.
But I think, yeah, I think we've been really good about following up because we've done transitional aged youth, telehealth, transgender, Latino, Latinx, Black slash African American, and then people living with HIV over 65 years old. All right, go ahead, Thomas.
Yeah, no, not a problem. I also want to kind of keep in mind, kind of this can be a prevention, folks. So it doesn't necessarily have to be people living with HIV. And I think what Franco's kind of acknowledging is that the cisgendered women that came through in this in last year's data, there was definitely just kind of looking at the group briefly. There's an energy of folks being diagnosed in emergency rooms or kind of so clinic settings that, and some of those folks were presenting with as had suffered violence at the hands of a intimate partner. So just sharing that with the group, it's like it'd be interesting to see if we could actually maybe partner with the organization that reaches those populations, or even something about the individual. It's tragic that people have unfortunately gotten so far through the system that they were not diagnosed outside of an emergency room or an urgent care setting. So I didn't really s answer anything, but it's just additional thoughts.
All right, thanks,
Laura,
Thomas. Go ahead, Laura.
One, I really liked TJ's question about like looking back and do we need to follow up on any of them? And I think that's a really useful way to think about this because a lot of times, like, you know, we do a cycle, we come up with stuff, we often say like more information is needed or we should follow up, and then we don't always. So I think that's really good. I'm also, as I mean, thinking about this in terms of HIV prevention as well, and the city is actively rolling back a lot of HIV prevention services for people who use drugs, particularly people who inject drugs. Those services are being any number of things. but they're not, the syringe access is dramatically less available than it was even a year ago. And so it would be interesting to hear from folks if they are still able to access HIV prevention tools, if they're able to access HIV testing, if they feel like they've been, you know, effectively connected to treatment or other things. Like, I just, it's my big fear right now as the mayor backs away from evidence-based services and the health department backs away from evidence-based services that we are going to see an HIV outbreak among people who use drugs, like Indiana, like West Virginia. So, you know, figuring out if we can get ahead of that, like, are people still able to access services? Are they getting what they need? Or is this, should we be thinking about this as a early warning, sign?
Thanks, Laura. That's actually very interesting. So I wrote down people who inject drugs as an option. All right, Lee.
What comes up for me around this is the fact that we are combining planning, HIV planning and prevention council. We rarely have the opportunity or and have any discussions around prevention, because we don't have control over a lot of those dollars. But I think this is an awesome idea. It's a great way to follow up, as Laura mentioned.
All right, seeing no more hands. So I have two written down what Franco suggested as cis women living with HIV, and then what Laura just suggested, which is people who inject drugs. Is there any discussion around this? We do
I'm
have to narrow it
wondering,
down to one, unfortunately.
yeah, I'm wondering with Franco's suggestion, are there any clear ideas of where to, are there any organizations or ideas on where we could find that population?
I mean, part of the challenge with women and narrowing it down even further to African American women is that the numbers are really small. So the change in new infections in the EPI report is shocking. And I don't want to dismiss that, but the numbers are still very
Very
low.
small, yeah.
And so it's just makes it challenging to try to pull together enough folks in that demographic to be able to assess. So it's I think it's important and urgent, and it's also challenging to measure in or to reach and to measure in this kind of process.
Totally. Can I just quickly answer just I think that yeah. So given I agree with what Laura's saying about the just like the number of infections, and also to Thomas like point about the interpersonal like partner violence and whatnot. That's part of the reason why I wrote Casa de las Madres, not so much because of people living with HIV, but wondering about access to like PrEP, because a lot of this could have been easily preventable, like if people had access to like this as well. And so I do wonder, given the conversations around PrEP that we're just having here, whether that could be sort of like the spin, which will be like knowledge or perception to of PrEP use or access to PrEP, and specifically in women that are experiencing violence in their with partners and whatnot. And so that's just again, I was just kind of thinking in terms of like what could be the missing link here for this increased number of infections, not so much necessarily for one particular population, but also because historically we do know that PrEP uptake has basically sort of like been the lowest in cis women, despite the numbers of HIV infections going up, not just in San Francisco, but in many places as well. So, yeah.
Beth has her hand up.
I have a couple of ideas about places you could possibly outreach to. But in terms of PrEP uptake in women, I wasn't there last week, but I saw the slides from the Getting to Zero presentation, and there's a lot of really good data there that might be of interest to some of the council, if anybody from Getting to Zero wants to share that at some point. And so there's at Ward 86, there's the Women's Center of Excellence, and that has at least 100 clients. Some proportion of those clients are African American, and they have a subcontract with UCSF Parnassus. And so there's a few clients over there as well. About 4 years ago, in a different project, we were doing like an internal HIV Health Services project in combination with some of the providers. We were working on a quality improvement project for viral load suppression for African American people. Not just women, but all people. But we did have them do a focus group, just like the provider did a focus group. They got about five women, but it was pretty influential and helpful, but it was small attendance as people are noting. So we have an experience doing something similar, and we got about five people and like a two-page summary. So smaller scale than a lot of what the council does. Doesn't mean you couldn't get more though.
Here.
I also want to mention we Kat and I did actually host a women-centered focus group for this last need assessment target, and we did unfortunately only get two people to participate in that. So it wasn't a great, I guess, result from that, but it is still doable. And I think, like Beth mentioned, it is still important to, I don't want to like dismiss that. It is very important to hear what they have to say.
Beth, I have a question. Based on the EPI report, do you have a sense around the context of the elevated numbers that could help us figure out, maybe get a sense of what may be going on?
I don't think I have a real sense. I mean, I saw the same presentation you guys did at the Planning Council, and I've heard a few different things. And I feel like somewhere it was suggested it might have been in the Planning Council that there might be some overlap between the people experiencing housing insecurity or homelessness and women who've been diagnosed with HIV. But I'm not positive about that. But that's in my mind. I feel like that's probably relevant. Some form of housing insecurity, maybe not living all the way outside, but yeah, so I think in looking at it, some of the people might be quite hard to reach. But once they're diagnosed, it's a little easier to find, then people are better connected to care. So I think it would probably be fairly hard to reach the people who are at risk, but important. Yeah, so sorry, I don't really know, but that's the impression I have.
Thanks. Thomas has his hand up.
Thomas and TJ. Yeah.
TJ, go ahead.
Thank you, Thomas. Hey, I think that women experiencing domestic violence is an incredibly important topic, but my fear is, like in the past when we've tried to do stuff like this with the Planning Council, we just have a really difficult time getting numbers. So I'm wondering if we could do it and yet also maybe have a little backup other group, another population that we want to look at. Because I just don't feel like that would be, that's not going to take the normal amount of time it would take for regulars.
You mean like kind of an exploratory to feel it out, see if we could pull in some numbers?
No, I mean, I think we should try. I'm thinking that we should try and do that, but I'm also thinking that maybe we need to have another population that we look at for something else. Because I don't feel like there's going to be a giant response, and it's not going to take up all the time of the staff time that would normally happen if we were doing a, a one that was well, populated with respondents. That's all.
Yeah, TJ, I feel like I was trying to think with I was trying to kind of reference negative folks as well. So it would kind of expand the pool significantly, and then centering around individuals that have either recently or currently experienced some kind of violence. It doesn't even have to be domestic. Just from the standpoint of either being out on the street or something along those lines. So the pool is much larger. I keep thinking of what Laura said with regards to the numbers are small for the number of women living with HIV in the city. And it's actually a diverse group as well. So it's a small group that becomes much smaller. But when you include individuals at risk for HIV, and then kind of throw in a couple other cofactors with regards to the violence, I feel like there's a number of shelters and providers that might be able to that do have support groups that we might be able to tap into where the lift is reasonable for staff to find folks. So, and just with, I can't remember who asked the question about Lee, I think it was you, Lee, like specifically what's going on with this particular number for the year. We actually have somebody looking at all of those charts at the moment and shared some preliminary data with us. It's very preliminary, so I just don't want to put it out in this particular space to kind of answer the question you just asked. So, but part of that indication was the fact that folks were being diagnosed in urgent care and hospital settings. And again, some were showing up in those particular spaces because they had been assaulted in some way, if that helps with the conversation. Be like, yeah.
I do want to address what TJ mentioned about having kind of a backup COLA. So what has happened in the past is if we, let's say we give this 2 months to try to outreach and we're not seeing big numbers come in, or maybe not enough to fully put together some kind of report back, then what we could do is we come back to this group and we just have a revote of a new COLA target. And so that's kind of what we can do moving forward if folks want to focus on this. I do want to also ask a clarifying question around what the language that folks want to use for the specific COLA target, if that's the case. Because I had originally written down cis women living with HIV, but it sounds like maybe it has become a little bit more specific regarding any kind of domestic violence.
I was thinking people not living with HIV. So people at risk for HIV would be the kind of expand the group in a more reasonable way. But that was, Franco, that was kind of a friendly amendment. So I don't know if you're open to that or not, or to the group, but I'm
No,
also willing to find the group, follow the group's lead.
I was also in agreement with that. Thank you for that.
And Kira, if you have to come back to us, I think it would be really great when we're talking about this stuff if we had a list of what needs assessments and COLAs we've done for like the last, 5 or 8 years. Just,
Yeah, send it out in advance.
yeah.
I want to speak towards the immigrant COLA. I think it's such a big issue right now. I mean, if everybody feels strongly about the other COLA idea and trying to figure out if we can pull in the numbers, spend a couple of months doing it, that'd be fine. But I really feel like the immigrant one would be, we get so much more data out of, especially with what's going on in America today, especially this administration.
Thomas, you still have your hand raised?
I do, and it's kind of for Laura with regards to the concern that you brought up, Laura, and it's still sticking in my mind. And I'm wondering if there are other ways to answer that question. And the question specifically was due to the fact that services have been limited in such a significant way, are we going to see an increase in HIV and maybe Hep C as well? Is that fair? Okay. Do you think the COLA would be a spot to kind of ferret that out, or let's I feel like
Rebecca
the
needs
epi
assessment.
data for 2025 would definitely, hopefully, well, not hopefully, but be a good tool. But I'm also trying to think of other levers that we might have access to answer that question as soon as possible.
Yeah, I mean, there's ongoing research that's happening in San Francisco, RTIs, ongoing studies, for example, that are, just sort of assessing general access to services. And so there are some more sort of epidemiological studies happening. But I think for purposes of this, when it comes to sort of how services get organized and how they get targeted and what is the impact of these changes on people, both people living with HIV and those at risk of HIV and their ability to access services, that to me feels more like the kind of qualitative stuff that we can get at in a COLA. Sort of, asking people like, has your access to services changed? Are you able to get HIV testing now? Have you been able to access HIV prevention, Hep C prevention tools? Or have you encountered any barriers? Have you changed your behavior? Because if you can't get pipes, you're going back to using syringes instead, or sharing syringes, things like that. So, and those are things that we're hearing anecdotally, through the folks that we serve, but does that hold up at a COLA level? I don't know. But it would be useful to have that information because I think that would help the planning council think about how services are provided.
Great. So you're also too thinking of a both for people living with HIV and people at risk for HIV. Okay. Cool. That's helpful clarity for me as well. Can we do two COLAs,
Yes. What I was going to suggest, it sounds like there's
Why are we
also
arguing?
a lot of discussion around this. We can table this discussion for next month, and I can also bring a list of the past needs assessment and COLA targets that we've done, if that's what folks, if it would be helpful, because I feel like that would be helpful then for folks to see.
Oh,
How
sorry.
that works.
I was serious. Can we do two? Or
We
is there just
typically
no?
can. I want to ask Mark about it, just because I think what we've done in the past is we've had more time, and I don't know if he wants it done by a certain timeline.
Okay, I mean, I like the two groups personally. So, Laura, what you said was pretty impactful. And then looking at the 2024 data specifically around cisgendered women is definitely something's going. I want to make assumptions. My curiosity is raised with regards to the current number. So we have seen that number go up and down over the years. So just to be not running to the hills kind of thing, it'll go 14 one year, 24 one year, and then it kind of does a little bit of a zigzag. But
It's the thing about small numbers is it doesn't
exactly.
take that much for it to look like it's really going up or down. At the same time, you take a 48% increase seriously, like you don't wait for it to level out if that's what it's going to do.
So
And
did
I, like the sort of HIV transmissions in cis women are usually related to transmissions related to sharing injection equipment, either women's own drug use or that of their sexual partners. It's often like it's closely connected, right? So I also am worried that we're going to see even more increase of new HIV infections among women. My caveat on all of that is if people are having If HIV testing, if HIV and Hep C testing is not as accessible to people who use drugs, is not being used by people who use drugs, then we're not going to see that potentially until it's a much more advanced outbreak, which also worries me. These are the things that keep me up at night. But
We've done straw votes in the past too, if we want to move ahead. I see Beth's hand up.
Well, I just wanted to mention that it's not just the new infections. There is also a viral rate disparity for women who have HIV already too. Like it is one of our lower populations.
Great, thank you.
All right.
Yeah, and Kira, can you just, I know I mentioned 5 to 8 years, but the Planning Council's only been doing this for like 9 years now. Can you just bring us the whole list of all the need assessments and COLAs that we did, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
So to Kira's proposal, do we want to wait for that and then look at it and reconvene next month?
I'm actually wondering if folks want to take a vote for one COLA target, which is cis women at risk for HIV. And then we can discuss a second COLA target next month.
That sounds good.
Just so
Sure.
we can get things moving for this, just in case.
Sure, let's do it.
All right. So is everyone okay with this target then?
Well, I think Thomas had a question or hand raise.
I will let this follow through
Okay.
and then I will raise my question. Thanks.
Sounds good. Sorry, go ahead, Kira.
All right. Any opposed? No? All right. So we found our first COLA target then.
And now, Thomas.
Thank you. Is there anything stopping us from voting on second, if possible?
I was going to say.
Yeah, I just
Yeah.
want to check in with Mark because I know I'm pretty sure he wanted this done by the end of the year. So I want to make sure if we have a timeline or if it's fine that we're doing two. Because we have done more than, I think we've even done three. This is before my time, but we've done three at some point.
Great. I thought the conversation was really helpful for my own ed education with regards to what's going on, and I felt kind of motivated to make sure that we get both done. So I just didn't want to lose that energy, particularly if we go into another wait a month,
So,
but
do we want to wait to vote until the next meeting, or can we at least like vote proposing that we do two and then you just feed that back to Mark and let us know what the
it's a
final verdict is?
no-go, then
Right,
it's a
exactly.
no-go.
But at least we can just vote and say, yeah, we want to.
Sounds like that's what folks want to do. So let's do that.
Any objections then?
And this is for people who inject drugs. Correct? Yes. Okay.
Yep.
Both people living with HIV and people at risk for HIV. So just to be specific, because I know we often think only people living
Yep.
with HIV.
Yep. And it, you know, one of the things we're hearing is that people had stopped injecting and had transitioned to smoking and or inhaling, and that they're now transitioning back because it's harder. So that I think is, you know, I think for me they would fall under the category of people who inject drugs, but people who use drugs, or people who inject drugs, I think is a reasonable way to say it, as long as we have an inclusive definition of injecting drugs, I guess I'll say, if that makes sense.
It does. What's that inclusivity specifically, Laura?
Including people who have injected drugs at some point, whether they are currently or not, right? So they may be primarily smoking their substances, but they are have been injecting.
I love how Thomas is really liberal with his thumbs
I'm really stimulated by the conversation. Tell you the truth, it's really nice to kind of engage with the council. I'm like,
I
is it
love
just
your.
me? Am I like over-caffeinated, or is it a really interesting
I
topic?
do
you're
You're fine. Lee's just being
a
a pest.
little,
Right? Yeah,
you're a little
Lee.
bit nerdy
All right. So hearing no opposed, we have our second COLA target.
Hooray. All right,
I'm gonna
so.
thumbs up it just to irritate Lee. All
right. Thank you, Thomas and Caribou. You'll update us next time once you talk to Mark about it. And anything else in terms of the, and then we said that the next assessment will then be people living with HIV with immigrant experience, is what it sounds like. Is that, yeah, cool. All right, so the next item on the agenda is a next meeting date and agenda items, which will be November 5th on Zoom. It says vote, so I'm
That'll be our
assuming.
last one for the month, probably.
Oh, yes. Okay. That's a good
Yeah,
reminder. We'll have to vote on it during next month. But per tradition, we don't typically meet in December.
no,
I see.
Unless somebody has a very strong opinion about it.
I've got your opinion right here.
Awesome. All right, so I believe that's it.
Hey, Laura, can you stick around for one sec? Okay, thanks.
Lovely seeing you all.
So funny, you
Awesome.
know the host, when the host leaves, right? Doesn't it end the call?
It's just going to take like 2 seconds.
All right, bye, y'all. All
it,
right.
DJ, is this about what you just texted me about?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll get it.
Awesome.
Okay,
Take care,
cool. Thank
everyone.
you. See
No
you.
worries. All right.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.